This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, August 12th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. In the first quarter, SoftBank, the big tech investor, posted its worst quarterly results ever. We talked about it on the podcast at the time. Between the pandemic and investments in struggling companies like WeWork and Uber, SoftBank was hit hard. But in the latest quarter, the company swung back in the other direction, and yesterday it reported a profit. Coming up, our reporter Rolf Winkler will break down the report and what it means for the future of SoftBank. That's after these headlines. A Wall Street Journal analysis has found that TikTok collected unique identifiers from millions of mobile devices without users' knowledge or consent. Here's our data reporter, Kevin Polson.
So the data that TikTok collected is called a MAC address, and it's a unique number in basically any piece of electronics that can connect to the internet. What it lets them do is, if they wanted to, they could track TikTok users even after that user has completely reset everything on their phone and attempted to start over and wipe the slate. They did that by taking advantage of a loophole in Android that lets you bypass a certain security restriction that Google set up in Android in order to get that data. We didn't find anything on the extreme end of what you could find had this actually been malicious software. There's nothing that on its face is a danger to national security. Instead, this is more like a dodge that you sometimes see executed by third-party gaming apps and other relatively small operators who are looking for an edge in collecting data to do targeted advertising and the like.
Our analysis showed that TikTok ended the practice in November, and the company says the current version of the app doesn't collect the addresses. But the news comes as the Trump administration has been dialing up the pressure on TikTok, as well as its Chinese parent company, ByteDance. The administration is concerned that Beijing could use any data collected by the app for espionage. TikTok has said that it doesn't share data with the Chinese government, and that it wouldn't do so if asked. A federal appeals court threw out an antitrust judgment against Qualcomm yesterday. The ruling rejects the government's claim that the chipmaker had engaged in anti-competitive business practices. Our reporter Brent Kendall has more.
This was a case filed in the very last days of the Obama administration by the Federal Trade Commission, which was then controlled by Democratic appointees. And they alleged that Qualcomm, which is, you know, the dominant cell phone chip provider, had basically linked its patents and licensing practices with the sales of its chips in anti-competitive ways that both harmed rival chip makers and customers. These would be cell phone makers like Apple and Samsung and the like. Early in the litigation went as poorly as it could for Qualcomm, and a judge in San Jose last year basically said everything they were doing on this front was unlawful and ordered an array of core changes to how they do business. This ruling was just as sweeping in the other direction, saying that everything the trial judge said was basically incorrect, and that in their view, Qualcomm, while aggressive and hyper-competitive, was not anti-competitive, and that, you know, unless the government could show more, which it didn't, that it fell short of proving its case and Qualcomm was free to do business as it had been doing.
We should note that Qualcomm has argued that it achieved its market position lawfully by developing and investing in breakthrough technologies, and that its licensing practices are above board. Airbnb is planning to file IPO paperwork later this month, according to people familiar with the matter. The filing would lay the groundwork for the company to begin trading before the end of the year. There's no guarantee that Airbnb will move forward on that timeline, but the news is evidence that the company is showing signs of recovery after the pandemic battered the travel industry. And Tesla says it'll enact a 5-for-1 stock split. The move is aimed at making the company's stock more accessible to a broader base of investors. Four consecutive quarters of growth, despite the pandemic, have made Tesla the most valuable car company in the world. Up next, we'll break down SoftBank's earnings and what they tell us about the company's comeback strategy. That's after the break. After some turbulent investments, SoftBank is back in the black. The tech investing giant reported a profit of nearly $12 billion in the 3 months ending in June. The report comes at the tail end of a tough year for SoftBank, and its CEO Masayoshi Son has been working to get the company and its signature Vision Fund back on track. Our technology reporter Rolf Winkler joins us to explain. Rolf, thanks for being here.
Happy to join you, Amanda.
So why is it so significant that SoftBank reported a profit? Remind us what's been going on for them.
Well, certainly late last year was tricky for them. They're best known recently for their gigantic technology investment vehicle, the Vision Fund, the $100 billion Vision Fund, which is so much larger than any other tech investment vehicle in human history. They made a lot of bets at high prices, and some of them didn't work out well. People will recall WeWork, which collapsed so spectacularly last fall. That was a big loss for the fund, but it had some other missteps as well. And certainly when the stock market declined so dramatically in March, that also had an impact on them. But it's come back pretty hard. Besides that, they've also been able to sell some assets and raise some cash and buy back their stock. And their stock, like a lot of the rest of the market, is up a lot since the lows in March.
Yeah, let's talk more about that. So what are the factors that kind of contributed to this quarter's success?
Well, I think the biggest effect is the market in general. The Federal Reserve, other central banks intervened very aggressively to prop up markets despite a lot of economic uncertainty, and that helps anyone with money in equities. But SoftBank has also taken some money off the table. They've sold some assets, including when they sold their Sprint. They owned Sprint in the United States, and they sold that to T-Mobile and got shares, and they've since sold about 2/3 of their T-Mobile shares. That raised a bunch of cash. They've sold some of their Alibaba stake. Recall Masayoshi Son made his name in a big way by investing in Alibaba at the very start and making huge amounts of money on that investment. He's finally started to sell some of it to buy back shares. Those have helped bolster the stock in recent months.
And how does all that fit into SoftBank's broader recovery strategy? Like you mentioned, they're making up for more than just a pandemic right now.
Right now, Masayoshi Son, he still really wants to be a tech investor, but he wants to shore up his balance sheet to give himself a little bit of breathing room first. In his presentation, they always do colorful slides. He had a photo of samurai warriors shooting guns under the headline defense. And he talked about how cash is defense for them. And so that's a reason for some of the asset sales. And I think right now, among the things they're considering, he also confirmed that they're looking to sell Arm, the semiconductor design firm that they bought a few years ago for a very hefty price tag, $32 billion. They're now talking about selling it. That's been reported, but he's now confirming it. So that will also raise yet more cash, which all of which can, you know, buy back some stock, shore up the balance sheet. But really, in his heart, Masayoshi Son wants to be an investor. He wants to keep putting money to work. He's now talking about investing in public companies, in big public tech companies, which he hasn't talked about before. And they started a small vehicle to do that.
And zooming out here, why is the tech industry paying such close attention to SoftBank? And whether CEO Masayoshi Son can get it back on track?
Certainly, the Vision Fund itself was a mammoth entrant into tech investing. It's hard to overstate $100 billion out of nowhere, largely funded by petrodollars, that had a huge impact on technology investing, the way it changed the conversation for companies that wanted to raise money from venture capitalists and growth equity investors. With an investor out there who was not only had $100 billion, but blew through it in 2 years. Most venture funds have a fraction of that money and they deployed over 4 or 5. So it was just this flood of capital. And that definitely changed the way funding was done in Silicon Valley for that period when all that money was floating around. So one reason we care is Masayoshi Son is a very big time technology investor, and his impact, if he's in the market, can be profound. If he comes back to the market in a big way because he gets more cash to invest, you know, it bears watching. And we should note, that's not a foregone conclusion. After he did the first $100 billion Vision Fund, he was going to do a second one. Big plans to raise another $100 billion fund, and that just ran right into a wall. The petrostate, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates said, you know what, no, we're not going to fund this time. You blew through our capital too quickly before. And we need to see some significant returns before we give you more money. So it went supernova for those 2 years, and then all of a sudden, well, it went supernova. It disappeared. The star blows up really big, and then it's gone. But now the question is, will he be back? The more of these assets that he sells, the more cash he raises, the more that can be put back towards investing in tech. And like I said, he can have a huge impact when he sets his mind to it.
Something to keep an eye on, our reporter Rolf Winkler. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Amanda.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. As always, we've got more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.